Alright, welcome to another episode of Simon Says, and today we have Lyra here.
Hello everyone.
And Lyra, you know, we have been talking about American politics the last couple of weeks, right?
Yeah, our favorite. I mean, Malaysian news as well.
Yeah, but it was interesting. We talk about CNN, we talk about DeSantis and Trump, and those have big impact over what's happening in the States and of course here. And we have been saying that the local development looks a bit quiet.
Yes.
But state election is coming out, and so it might be interesting. But today we want to kind of zoom back to the Malaysian news, right?
Yep.
So what have you been reading? What has been catching your attention?
Well, I think one of the things that we have been very passionate about is really the budget.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, earlier on we talked about the debt ceiling being raised in the United States. But here in Malaysia, we want to talk about the part whereby our Prime Minister previously mentioned about the fact that he's going to be a good steward of the budget 2023.
Mm-hmm.
And here we have this news that really just headlining the whole thing.
Yep.
That it says the Health Ministry renew Farmaniaga Logistics and Sdn Bhd's contract to manage its supply chain and medical product logistics because of its excellent past performance. Well, but the thing here, which is a bit alarming, is that previously, I mean, back in February, we saw that Farmaniaga posted 607 million net loss for 2022 and classified financially troubled.
Yep.
So when people think of it, I wonder if people are too, basically they don't remember the news, or they don't, I mean, it doesn't bother them because maybe the figure is too big for them to even comprehend, or maybe they perceive it to be two different entities altogether. But when we were just talking earlier on that Farmaniaga, I mean, who's the big boss behind this whole thing? I mean, is it a government-linked companies, or is it actually directly owned and directly related to the Ministry of Defense?
Yeah, we were just talking about it earlier on, and we kind of had to do a bit of reading also. I mean, of course, Farmaniaga kind of came into the imagination of the general public during the COVID seasons, because they were the main company that procure all the vaccine, and they were given huge budget. But then, of course, the last time we talk about this company, they were already in PN17 status, which basically is for a listed company in sort of distressed financial situation. So the whole thing about excellent past performance, I think that's the thing that you want to highlight, right?
Yes.
It's sort of like a mockery, right? And now, it's not that we want to pick, go and nitpick all the every little speech and things like that. But we want to also talk about the general feeling of reform, which do you think is fair to say is somewhat lacking?
It is.
I mean, we have defended the unity government. We kind of say, look, give it a bit more time, give it me a bit more time. And of course, we say wait until state elections. But still, the reform seems trickling.
Well, I mean, even when we say give it a bit more time, there still should be a timeline, right?
Yep.
I mean, you can't be forever on a rubber stamp. You don't know when we are going to be able to see and have a review. I mean, even with company, the employees, you have yearly KPI.
Yep.
I mean, we're not really asking for a lot. We are just saying that within these few months of performance, because when you are saying that you're championing for reforms, you're championing for a better management of the budget. But these sort of things are the things that will really scream, come, look here. Because, I mean, where else are you going to be able to evaluate the performance of the current government? Mm.
Now, I know we want to talk about Farmaniaga and all the government-linked company. But before we go into that, if we take just one step back, because remember the whole thing about unity government, the background behind it was Perikatan Nasional, the Green Wave. So there is this, you know, some commentator, they hold this view that the unity government is kind of passive, kind of quote-unquote neutral. I mean, I won't even use the word neutral. You know, they're basically just not going for hard reform. It's because they don't want to quote-unquote spook voters. And it's like, why will voters be against anti-corruption. Why would voters be against getting rid of the systemic issues that have plagued our financial status? Are you saying that those who supported Perikatan Nasional, the Green Wave, are for corruption? Because that seems to be the mindset, you know, that if we do too much reform, it will spook, quote-unquote, the Malay votes. But I think, I mean, if I am a Malay, I will be insulted by this kind of thinking.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you are saying that I'm more corrupt and any reform will cause me to vote the old regime, so to say. I don't know. I mean, it's just all the commentators I've been reading and people are very, very frustrated, especially the civil rights society. Now, you know my view on civil rights society, right? I mean, I appreciate what they do, but I think sometimes they are in those morality high ground, you know, up and mighty. But I do think they are on to something here, you know. It's like, why are you so afraid? Prime Minister Anwar Ibrahim, what are you afraid of?
Yeah, exactly.
And I just get that feeling that it's okay, maybe it's a tactical consideration, maybe it's just an election strategy. But of course, we know DAP being one of the main partners is really in a bind. And even PKR, right? I mean, you're supposed to be reformist party. And I don't hear people kind of having a robust discussion. Now, you can say about unity government, let's not rock the boat, etc., etc. Those are, I guess, fair comments. But after 6-7 months, I guess people are a bit frustrated with the lack of progress.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we just talk about the fact that there are many, many Republican candidates that really just join in the presidential ring.
Yeah.
And never before you have seen that the former Prime Minister, President Trump, his polling was really just going up higher and higher each time because he touched on the right topic. He he dare go to the places whereby people think it's not politically correct for you to say so. And yet he really touched the core of the voters' heart. Yep. Those cultural issues, those bread and butter issues. So if we really learn from the lessons from the United States, surely I think our Prime Minister could have a bit more boldness to really just challenge this sort of status quo, because these are the exact reasons that we have voted in the current government.
Yep.
I mean, like it or not, we may not have the threshold to reach the whole PH government, but you have the unity government, still people voted them in.
Yep. Yeah, I like how you link the whole development in America, especially with President Trump, because what he represents would be the populist movement. And populist would be what the main population they want. You know, we're not talking about socialism, we're not talking about free market. You know, we're talking about, you know, those are the two spectrum of extreme, and it hasn't helped that nation. And I guess in Malaysia, we are coming to that discussion now. You know, it's like, you can see Prime Minister, I think we touched on this even during the budget, how it's really, it's not populist, it's really tax the rich kind of budget.
Socialist.
But if you want the whole country to move ahead, yes, I agree, we do have certain poverty issue as a result of COVID we need to deal with. But there's only that many ways you can deal with. You need to increase revenue or you need to decrease waste.
But isn't that the exact failure? I mean, if we do post-mortem on new economic policy, NEP, I mean, that exactly eliminate the whole working class. Basically, you really help the poor to become even poorer.
Yep, and you only have the GLC become it's like a corporate T20, right? I mean, it's not even T20, it'll be like the 5%, 1% elite. And you're right. I mean, some people have kind of critiqued NEP, but it's still, do you feel like it's still kind of topic that people do not want to talk about?
Yeah, I think so.
And I think for two reasons. One would be, it is just so long already and people can't even remember. I think this generation cannot understand or it's not reminded, it's not in the curriculum, it's not in the consciousness of the people, how the whole NEP created such a GLC kind of culture around the whole nation. Then, of course, the second thing is people don't want to talk about the failure. I know some academics have kind of voiced out the failure. I mean, very, very few. You can find some scholastic article, but they always kind of dress it in such a way that, oh, it's like this, it's like that. There are 10 factors and then 7 didn't happen.
They meant well, but slowly it drifted away.
Yeah, you can just feel like there's that kind of restraint. But we are at a time where, you know, it's like maybe something drastic needs to happen. And I guess maybe with the unity government, they felt a bit bound because of so many different collision. But they all seem to want to say that we are against corruption, right? But anyway, if we come back to the Pharma Niaga thing, I mean, I'm just reading this article you sent me. The headline, of course, MOH renews Pharma Niaga contract. That's what you alluded earlier on. Just... Yep. 8th of June, very, very new article. But I'm just thinking, you know, because PN17 is Bursa Malaysia, is a status for distressed company. If you want to get out from there, you need to submit a plan to say, I'm able to rehabilitate, I'm able to come out stronger.
Hmm.
Maybe that's why they needed a 10-year contract.
Maybe.
Yeah, I mean, if you think, I mean, now I'm putting on my restructuring hat, you know, because I come from insolvency background. So, if I'm a consultant, I would say, look, you want to get out from PN17, you need contract. You need to show to Bursa that you are able to go into the black and not red.
Now, my question would be, because having known that this Pharma Niaga is actually under Boosted Holdings,
yep.
which is basically under Lembaga Tentera,
yep.
so LTAT, which manages the pension fund for all the armed forces.
Yep.
So... and it's under the Ministry of Defence. So here you have the Ministry of Health that renews the contract.
Yep.
And here you have Ministry of Defence, who is basically...
Yeah, it's a left hand to right hand.
Yeah, but my question here would be, isn't it a conflict of interest between the two ministries? I mean, any ministries in the government,
yep.
so long you have the power, you have the say, you have the majority... Isn't your interest for the people? But it would seem like in this case, yes, I totally understand the need for restructuring of companies. If,
yep.
let's say, the subsidiary company is facing some financial distress, the parent company wanted to bail out, that's completely fine. I mean, because that is really what a company is wanting to do. I mean, that is the right of the shareholders as well. But in this case, these two are under the purview of two ministries, and you have which has... two of the largest budget. So I would think it's almost like it's a gang out, maybe intentionally or unintentionally. You are trying to help your partners to basically get out of this financial distress.
Or maybe it's instruction from cabinet. I don't see any reference to cabinet. And the health minister tries to present it as if it is the Ministry of Health decision.
But both statutory bodies, I mean, shouldn't it go under... like go back to parliament to...
Actually, if we... I mean, not specific to LTAT or those other statutory form body, but most of these agency, I mean, if you talk about EPF, you talk about, you know, the various structure form under Ministry of Finance, they will always have a provision to say the minister can make special ruling. So I guess we go back to and even more fundamental discussions about the governing, the management of this GLC. It has always been executive heavy. I think that is without a shadow of doubt. Because remember, up to 2004, you know, we talk about, 2018, of course, we have change of federal government. 2014 was good. But then you just talk about a few GE cycle before that, we hardly have any respectable opposition.
Yeah.
So for the longest time, it's rubber stamp. Even today, parliament is still rubber stamp. And you just need to look at the last budget, not the Anwar Ibrahim budget, but not the Tengku Zafru budget, but the year before when they had the backdoor government. And that was the time they are looking at, you know, whether the government will fail. Because historically, under a Westminster system, if the government cannot get that budget over the line, the Prime Minister should offer his or her resignation. because that's considered a loss of confidence in the house. So there was a time that they're looking whether that government will fail, you know, 2 years back. But of course it didn't, because they have some deal and things like that. So I guess the last few years we are seeing the parliament trying to flex its muscle.
Yeah.
But then we go back to the inherent weakness of the Westminster system. The executive and parliament are the same gang. Now, of course, technically you have the backbencher, which technically speaking are not executive. I mean, that means you are a member of parliament, but you have no official positions. But remember the last backdoor government, almost every member of parliament have some kind of executive role. I mean, maybe you are not... of course, the best, you want to be a minister, deputy minister, okay, depending on what ministry. Then some will have certain high-ranking position within the ministry, or some will become chairman of this, chairman or that. So it's almost like being rewarded kind of thing. But especially, I think, Muhyiddin or Sabri's government, I can't remember already, that so many of them have a role. It's almost like it's like an exchange for their pledge of loyalty. So it's a whole system, and that's why, you know, we often compare and contrast, right? The Westminster system, this is what we have. We can't really fundamentally change it. But there is that inherent conflict of interest between member of parliament and the government, because they are not separate. The American system, of course, very separate. But the separation also comes with its problems, that people can behave in a rogue manner. And, you know, just look at the New York district attorney, just do whatever he wants. So decentralization have its problem, and that's what is happening, right? I mean, we just talked to some people who do business in Indonesia, right? So Indonesia, they will say the federal is not nearly as strong, and that's why things are not so efficient. But then the province, the governor or the province are pretty powerful.
Indeed.
And that's why if you do business in Indonesia, the first question they ask you is what province? Because every province is... So that's the whole discussion. Do we want... we have sort of a model that's happening now with East Malaysia, with Sabah and Sarawak asking for autonomy. We're both from Sarawak. The official language of Sarawak is English.
Yep.
And I mean, I'm a lawyer. If I practice law, we go to court, we don't use Bahasa Malaysia. We use English. Let's not talk about the practical side, because most of them are not that good with BM anyway. But it's an interesting experiment, right? That you have a state, you have a region that, they want to be autonomous. And is that a good or bad thing?
Well, I mean, I guess maybe a bit of bias, but I do think it is a good thing though. Mm. I mean, I'm not speaking on behalf of just Sarawakian and maybe even Sabahan as well. I think it would be good even if other states also have certain measure of autonomy. That will greatly benefit, because you then push all this development of the infrastructure back to the state government, and then you can begin to see how the distribution of wealth really benefit all these people, because I guess everyone wants to have that fair chance of being upgraded.
Yeah. We mentioned in the show before, I don't know which episode, that when the federal government changed for the first time, that there was a constitutional scholar from National University of Singapore here, and he came, and of course one of the topic was talking about, and that's where I start hearing the term devaluation, and they talk about the devaluation of federal rights in favor of state rights. And of course, the focus at that time was MA63, etc. But he was the one who made the point and said, look, all the states should enjoy some form of federal devaluation, not just Sabah and Sarawak.
Hmm.
Because the federal encroachment is pretty severe. And I mean, let's not talk about island states like Hong Kong, Singapore. It's even much worse. And of course, they will say, oh, it's for practical reasons. We need control and things like that. But it's something that is... I guess very common in Asia.
Yeah.
So Indonesia and Philippines, quite interesting, because of the island geography, I'm not sure, it's
too far away.
And you just need decentralization. And when we look at what's happening around the world, just taking a zoom out a little bit, look at the financial crisis. And the other day, we're just talking about, we deviate a little bit. We're just talking about the economy, inflation. And did you see, right, the Federal Reserve Chairman, when people were asking him, how did you come out with an inflation figure? Because they have a fixed figure before they even factor in supply and demand. I mean, we always believe that inflation is due to supply and demand, right?
Yeah.
But Federal Reserve actually has a fixed number before supply and demand. I can't remember, it's 2 or 3%. That means every year, assuming all the supply and demand is in peak condition, you still suffer 2 or 3 or 4% of inflation. Actually, some people know it. I know, like, for example, my HR department, the bosses will be like, you know, every year want to review staff, and if the staff is good, they want to retain it. They will be like, oh, the increment must at least compensate inflation. So anyway, go back to the Federal Reserve Chairman Powell. So the reporter asked him, how did you come out? Is there study? Is there a computation? And he was stumped for a while and he couldn't reply. And then he was mumbling, oh, the central bankers around the world all agree. So it's like, then now people will say, oh, you're being a conspiracy theorist. But it's not. It's like, then you see the power of centralization. Oh, I should say the abuse of power of centralization. Yep. They can just fix any inflation. And of course, we know why. Because the fiat system, print more money. And that's why now, in a way, you can see why economy wants to kind of decouple with dollar, because America is just printing money.
Yeah.
And it's like, I think so many people want to decouple if they can, because they know the value will just become weaker and weaker. But anyway, this is like the whole framework about centralization and decentralization. And okay, let's not deviate too far and come back to Pharma Niaga, because I guess from our discussion, you are saying about what kind of accountability, right? What kind of control? I mean, here we have the Ministry of Health blatantly say they perform well, and we know it's just bullshit, right? I mean, but what do you think? What would you like to see, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, because one of the things that really caught my attention was because Dr. Zaliha was basically just commenting on the performance, the great performance, past performance, in a reply to Mr. Tan Hong Ping, which is Pakatan Harapan Bakri. So he urged the government, he basically, to state if Pharma Niaga's monopoly in supplying medical products to health ministry facilities will be broken. But I would say the answer is not really clear. I mean, you're not really answering the question. Instead, you're just saying, oh, because they did well. So you're basically rewarding, I don't know. I mean, it's almost like you're rescuing, you're trying to rescue.
Yeah, I mean, of course, government, left hand, help, right hand. We don't know if there's instruction from MOF, there's instruction from more senior cabinet minister. Chief secretary, you know, we always say the most powerful person in the whole government is chief secretary. Chief secretary could have just called, call Ministry of Health and say, get it done, I don't care how.
Yep.
But you're right, you know, in terms of the accountability, in terms of, you know, the Bakri MP, of course, raised a very good question. When the vaccine was brought in, there was supposed to be a white paper, and I remember you being kind of asked about it. But until today, we don't really see. That was during KJ's time, because billions and billions of ringgit were spent on vaccines. And I guess we want to know how many vaccines you buy, how many you spend, how many were destroyed. Because if you perform so badly when everyone you are forcing everyone to take vaccine, then either something is wrong with your supply and calculation. I mean,
something is wrong with the business model.
You are a quantity surveyor, you know. It's like, if you buy even 10% or 20% too much of material, I think the quantity surveyor will be screwed, right?
Yeah.
He or she will lose a job already. So it's like, you're supposed to be on the back of 2 or 3 years where everyone, the government is forcing everyone, or, okay, maybe forcing is a bit too strong. No, I'm going to stick with forcing. But forcing plus strongly encourage.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden, you're saying that the performance is bad. So it could only be bad management. You buy too many. And remember, at one point, they were saying we can get free vaccine from China,
I mean,
from Sinovac.
Yeah, I mean, I would even think maybe there is an indication of corruption that is going on, because you never know. I mean, we don't see how the procurement was being processed. I mean, the tender bid and things like that. And here you have financial distress. And here you have the bailout, free bailout. So, I mean, I guess we are really just asking for... I mean, these will be the questions that will really interest the people.
Yeah.
Because basically corruption, I mean, like what you alluded earlier on, does that mean that if we kept quiet, does that mean that we're supportive of corruption?
Now, of course, this is very, very new development, Q&A, 8th of June. Of course, one of the way to do accountability would be the member of parliament can raise the questions, and even the development leading to unity government. I mean, you look at Law Minister Azalina has been saying, you know, want just more power to the legislature, you know, to approve AG, MACC appointment. Those are good developments. Now, of course, in other Westminster system, Australia, New Zealand, Canada, UK, obviously, they will have different committee, you know, to look at. So this will be, it could be under COVID task force, it could be under health task force. So maybe we need to have a bit more of that. I don't think we are seeing enough of that. But of course, I mean, those committee usually are backbencher, but you see, from my observation, the backbencher, yes, they want to... I mean, we had the public accounting, the accountability committee, you know, PAC, those kind of things. And those are all backbencher. They'll come out with a report. But and you remember one year, the report say, you know, waste of billions and billions.
Yep.
But was there any follow-up? And the other thing, of course, is at the end of the day, the 222 member of parliament, I don't want to criticize them too much, but inherently, they have a conflict of interest, because you are backbencher today. Tomorrow, you could be a frontbencher. You become a minister. And all of a sudden, when you are minister, you look at all the ministers, no matter how principled and good they are, the moment they become minister, they shut up. They can't criticize the government anymore. So, I guess that's where we are as a nation. And unfortunately, we only have 5 years to kind of, you know, present our voice and things like that. But the coming state election will be interesting, I guess, because now the state election all around Malaysia sort of decoupled from federal election.
Yeah.
And I don't know, you know, Farmer Niaga, you know, we are passionate about it, because we felt like there was an abuse in the vaccine procurement. And I mean, all the news, right, say we get free vaccine and things like that.
But who pays for it?
Yeah, but exactly. But I guess another thing will be, we can look at Farmer Niaga's account. I mean, those are public. But of course, those are kind of top line ledger information, how much is spent, you know, total expenses, but without the breakdown. But even then, to be in PN17 position, you must spend considerably more than your revenue. So that will give us some clue where the... I think you don't need to be a genius to guess. The main expenses will be vaccine procurement. And it seems like what they say about cheap vaccine is totally untrue. But anyway, I think we don't want to harp too much on that. But anyway, what I mean, besides parliament supervision, what else do you think people can do? I mean, if you are normal citizens and we felt... I mean, what can we do? I mean, of course, one of the things we do, we try to talk about it in shows like this. What else? I mean, should we call our MP and say, you know, we're not very happy with taxpayer money being drained?
Yeah, I mean, I was just about to say, be the most annoying voter that you can be to your MP.
Do you think there's any impact if we call them?
I think so. But I guess because they are not used to this sort of calling in, hi, are you doing your job? But I guess if maybe if a lot of people were there to voice out with a bit more research, a bit more follow-up on the current news, and you just ask basic questions and see if they can answer these sort of things, or if they will even be bold enough to raise this up in the parliament.
Yeah. Actually, I have been kind of not purposely looking for it, but people kind of show me, you know, there's Telegram group, there's WhatsApp group, kind of like quote unquote whistleblower, corporate whistleblower, and of course many other anonymous, and they, I mean, there's a lot of leak and things like that, and citizen journalism maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
And for I think we haven't seen a lot of this kind of exposure, probably because people are kind of still dealing with the bread and butter issue primarily. And but I guess when life gets a bit, I mean we're still in a season of recovery, right, from the 2 years, 3 years of lockdown. Maybe after that, people, when bread and butter is no longer a primary issue, then they start to want to talk about it.
I was just thinking about, being the annoying voter. Because of the recent, Coldplay tickets are sold out very, very quickly. But there were this group of resellers that really tried to jack up the price so ridiculously high. And immediately it got the attention of our minister.
Yep.
So maybe that sort of things people could do a bit more. I mean, with the technological advancement these days, and you could just basically make your voices known.
So like community organizer.
Yeah.
Actually, another one that really was working was during the Gawai Harvest Festival. Remember, a lot of East Malaysians, they found out the tickets so expensive. And of course, government cannot just tell airline, drop your price because it's supply and demand issues. But what the government did, I was just reading the report, I'm not sure the detail, is that they bought the tickets at the original price and resell it at a much cheaper price. So now, of course, I'm not sure if people agree with that, but for a lot of Sabah Sabahan who have not been back for 2 or 3 years, you can't ask them to pay 3,000 ringgit for return flight. It's like 1 month salary or more. So many of them were able to go back for maybe 600-700 return. So that also come from the outrage, right? People have a certain outrage. And so I guess it's like how we see here and there, right? People can post in social media. Social media, of course, the reach could be wide or narrow depending on your followers. But maybe someone could kind of harness all the energy and make it into... we see that a lot with the grassroots political movement. You need to harness the energy and kind of just synchronize and amplify. So maybe, you know, through social media, through funny, sarcastic video. I don't know. Exactly. Ours is a bit more serious kind of discussion. But I think Malaysian sarcasm work, right?
Yeah, I mean, talking about sarcasm, do you want to just quickly touch on this?
Yeah, but I think maybe we can kind of do it in another episode. I think our time probably allows it. So I think let's end the discussion on Pharma Niaga for now.
Yep.
Okay, so until next time, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.